You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hi there, Colleen here, and this is a mini episode inspired by the ending of the semester and the ending of the year and the look back on life in a year that the ending of your year has, because at least for me, I oftentimes, instead of thinking about, oh, New Year's, like this is the turning point, I tend to think about where I was at this time last year and a few years ago and a few years before that, what my life looked like, the places and spaces I inhabited, the things I was excited about and struggling with and intellectually curious about. And then looking at where my life is today and both seeing where change has happened, how it's happened, and also, I guess I would say, tracking some of the through lines, because those are also really meaningful. The things that have endured and maybe grown or shifted or maybe receded in some way, but the through lines of time. And one thing that also occurs to me as I do this on and off throughout the day and throughout my days is that oftentimes the feelings of the moment are, when I look back and reflect, are less tangible. I remember that the feeling was there, but it's other parts that I of my life that I see more crystallized versus, like, sometimes when I'm in the moment of this moment that I don't necessarily see the parts around me as much, but I can sort of aware of what it feels like to be in this moment. And time has an interesting way, as we look back on it and anticipate the future, of bringing some of that, maybe some emotions more into focus and other emotions receding in terms of what's known of this moment in the future and the past. So it's with that as the larger context for what this episode is about, is this week was the ending of my academic semester. So it's the end of classes. And one of the classes that I taught this semester was called Fundamentals of Dance. And this is a class that is a first, it's designed to be a first dance class. So it's an introduction to what college dance is like, some basic dance terminology, of course, specific dance movements based in dance, as well as improvisatory scores. And I love teaching it. And this semester I had a very present, willing, I guess I'd say a very heart-centered, willing to engage group of students in fundamentals of dance. And they, a couple weeks ago, I introduced some of Rudolf Laban's space harmony theories. So the short version of space harmony is that there's a sphere of movement around our bodies, which we call a kinesphere. And it's everywhere we go. It's with us. It's like an aura. And it's the furthest out we can reach without taking a step. So it's our sphere of movement directly and immediately around our bodies. And Laban noticed that we move through this kinesphere in interesting and patterned ways, repeatedly patterned ways. He was interested in them, but they're repeatedly patterned ways with very unique rhythms of mobility and stability. He also noticed that while we might perceive that the space around our bodies is empty or neutral, he noticed it's actually highly, highly loaded with expressive material, with metaphoric material, with meaning for us, and that the spaces are in, like, our homes and our offices, our playgrounds, the spaces that we live in our lives directly shape and pattern our movement through our kinesphere. So if you think of a place that, like, in your life that you really love to be, that just feels like it's home to you, brings you comfort, you might imagine, if you're not in that space listening, you might imagine that you could superimpose that space, that environment, into wherever you are now. And as it comes into your imagination, begin to notice where in the space you place your body. Are you at the middle level? Are you on the floor? Are you standing? And then, excuse me, and then how you move through that space. So do you walk through the center of the space? Do you walk around the periphery at the edges? Are you sort of traversing between the center and the edges? How would you characterize your movements? What's the quality? So he also started to notice that these things were linked, and that, as Winston Churchill said, I think I said this in the last episode, that we build our houses and then our houses shape us, something like that. Okay, so this was the setup, Laban's theories of space harmony. And Laban ultimately, one of the many things he did was he began to place the body in different platonic solids, so like an octahedron, a cube, an icosahedron. And he created movement scales based on the corners of those forms, almost like a musician would play scales in music to tune their body, tune their ear, tune their instrument. People studying movement could do these scales as a way to tune their body to different spatial poles, different rhythms and patterns in space, different needs on the body level for stability and mobility, for flexibility, for rotary capacity. So he created these scales, and I was teaching my fundamentals class a couple weeks ago some of these scales. They got totally into it. We made some folk dances. We did some ballet. We did some French court dances, and saw how these different movement styles had proclivities towards different platonic solids and scales. And so they asked that we do it again. Okay, this is taking me a long time to set up. So one of the series of scales is in a large form called the icosahedron. The icosahedron has 12 corners, has 20 faces, and in these scales we move from one corner to another corner, to another corner. And in a lot of the scales, you move to all 12 corners. So I was teaching the students one of these scales called the A scale. And they asked to revisit this week. So we did it as part of our ending day. So we revisited the A scale. And what you do in the A scale as you progress through it, so say your hand goes from one corner to another corner to another corner to the next corner through these 12 spaces, that you're going to move in the sequence. But what Laban did with these scales is he developed different phrasings. So in one phrasing, you start and say corner apple, you move through corner peach, and you end in corner orange. And then you go on to the next corner, move through it, and then pause at the next. And so there's this rhythm of beginning in one, moving through another pause or end phrase, and then keep going, move through another pause or end phrase. And depending on where you start, so if you start at one corner, move through the next, and then end, and then go on, you get something called a volute, which is very swingy. It's very rounded. It feels very gradual. So you're going from one place around your body, passing through another place to end another. And there's this feeling of gradual, swingy, fluid movement. Now, say you advance or back up one of those spaces. So in the space that you moved through would now become a place you paused. And then the space that you paused before becomes a space you move through. So say you switch it to that phrasing. This becomes called steeple phrasing. And this one is sort of punctuated. It's sharp. It goes up and down and much more aggressive and reversing feelings. And so what this was making me think about is how when we move from one thing in our life to another, it may be that we're going to move through these things regardless, but how we sequence, where we pause and where we pass through to then pause somewhere else, that becomes the characteristic or the feeling tone of how we're moving through our lives. So if our lives and the way we feel change in our lives feels sharp and punctuated and everything's changing all at once and then it's changing again and it's changing again, we might think of that as being inspired by steeple phrasing. But say you end up pausing somewhere else and moving through, so you're kind of switching things, you might actually be doing the same things in your life, but this time because you've changed where you're landing or where you're stopping, the feeling of change in your life may feel more gradual. So we were talking about this. This was coming up in class, if you can follow that idea. And so this has me thinking more and more about how so much of how we talk about, make sense out of, conceive of change in our lives has a physical expression, a physical connection. And some of the metaphors, I mean, first of all, when we are studying movement, we are studying the fundamental most experience of change in our lives. Human movement is the actual changing of our form all the time. That is the nature of movement, to be changing. It's not static. It has a ongoingness and a continuity and a progression of one thing to the next. So it is apt that when we study, when we talk about change in our lives, we would go to our bodies as a source of understanding and making sense out of that change. So here's a few different words or thoughts that have been on my mind since that class, which is as we move through our lives and the changes of our lives, sometimes people talk about bracing against change. And if you can feel into that, what's it feel like when you think about bracing against? For me, it's a hardening of my muscles. It's a holding myself away from and that change and the change away from me. It's sort of like I don't want it to happen. Another one that you might hear is like moving with it. So that one feels like the change comes through me and I let it shift me. But it may be like having I'm the female and I have a male lead, if you think of it in those ways, in terms of social dance. And I'm not necessarily the one in control, but it's coming at me and I'm accepting it and sort of, there's an element of passivity, but I'm also active in going with it. Going with the flow is similar, maybe a little bit different for you. For me, somehow, this one feels more like I'm riding it. I'm on top of it instead of it moving through me. So that's one other way we might think about change is when we meet it. What is the response in our bodies to having to meet it? What happens physically when we encounter change? And then how does that set us up for being with change in the way we want? Or may also notice that actually it's serving me somehow, but I don't actually want to be moving this way. I don't want to be meeting change in my life this way because it may actually be hindering what it is that I'm seeking to have happen. A couple other thoughts on this is a couple years ago when I felt like my life was only my job. I was just working so much. And I remember saying to friends, I just feel so one-dimensional. I feel so one-dimensional right now, as if that was the only pull in my life that I had to work on. And since then, now my life feels very multidimensional. So it's interesting to think about this, right? This idea of being pulled in one direction or pulled in multiple directions. If I'm pulled in multiple directions, then I might be more multidimensional in the way that I'm living. And if I am like pulled in one direction or like feeling like I'm only one dimensional, it's like I have one thing that I'm so focused on and I'm putting everything into that. And I don't have a sort of rightness or wrongness. There was a transformative homecoming for me in my work about being so focused on it. And there's a sense of like breadth and the world is open to me and feeling like I have more dimensions that I'm holding at one time. And it means that I'm quickly shifting from one thing to the next with my attention on a daily basis. And that I think in life, like these things aren't static, just like movement. We might be one dimensional for a while. And then as other things present themselves, we shift, our lives shift to be able to hold and navigate these other dimensions. And then a couple other thoughts about change and the ways we physicalize it. This came up over the summer quite a bit when I was in Maine leading a workshop. I was with six women and we were at this gorgeous estate on the coast of Maine and we were doing a workshop on body, landscape, and the creative process. And so actually I'm going to be doing another one of these in May or June, in June. 3rd through 7th, if you're interested. But we had morning movement practice that set up with some philosophy, some embodied experiences, focusing on embodied experiences, that then set up some excursion into the incredible natural landscape of Maine. And then there was creative time in the afternoon and beautiful candlelit dinners every night. It was just amazing time. And one of the things that the week started with was in conversation around our first dinner. Some of the participants were talking about how they had heard this idea of having your heart open and opening the heart forward. And I said then and then continued to revisit over the week that the heart too is multidimensional. And so if you think about the forward, the front, as the future, like I look ahead to the future, there's the idea of space being again activated with meaning, the space around us. So ahead of us, what's in front of us, what's forward is the future. It doesn't have to be that way. That's the way we understand it. And then what's behind us, the space behind me is like the past, like back when we were kids. Like what's back there is what it used to be and what it was once. And what's in front of us is what's ahead. And we're moving forward into the future. We're moving ahead. Something like getting ahead of ourselves. We might hear that in language. And so if we're thinking of sending the heart forward, I think that's like the idea of radiating hope and love into my perceived future. And that does feel really good. I think that helps me move into the future with trust, which is a highly unknown thing, that future. And then also if we're really pushing our heart forward, opening it forward or the chest space, what happens to the past? Like, does that mean that there's a closing off of the past? And so we were like talking about this and exploring it. And I have really loved the image of having a deep back of my heart that I can settle into, that has a place of wisdom and knowing within it. And so also in this is like, what about the heart that can shine love on the past? Can we look back to what has happened to us, to where we were a year ago or 3 years ago, and see that past, behold that past from a place of shining love on it? And, you know, I know that in some ways, while we can't change the past, we do change everything that happens now and how changes possibly how we feel about or make sense out of the past. And so that does in some ways change, I think, the past. And then it also changes this moment and it changes what can happen going forward into the future. So that's another connection on this idea of like, how are we navigating changes? Am I sort of bracing or pushing or bolstering myself forward into something? Or have I sort of gotten stuck or hunched back into the past? Or am I able to sort of get into this presence of this moment and work with my skills in my bodily knowing, my body as a resource, to navigate whatever the changes are that are sitting here in this moment? And I think this little idea of the past also brings up for me something that I have heard, which is like, well, you got to get over it. We're just going to have to get over it. And that to me suggests something about a weight shift. When we shift our weight, we literally propel our bodies from one base of support to another. And we do need to get our full weight from that one place over to this new place. When you take a step, ideally you're shifting your weight fully. You're shifting your body, your torso, from one leg fully over to the other leg, fully over to another. Now, most of us don't walk that way, and I don't always either. But I was rock climbing last night, and I was noticing how totally satisfying it felt to go propel myself from one leg fully over, to feel the balance of my pelvis fully supported over the other leg. And, it's not something I feel all the time, but it was feeling really good last night. And I was thinking about that as an image of also moving from what was to what is now into the future. It's like the idea of getting over it, which I think can be kind of snide and mean sometimes, or dismissive of someone's experiences, I also think implies, well, get yourself fully here. Propel yourself from what was to being fully supported, supporting your weight fully in this moment. And it's from there, right, this being fully supported here in this moment, that then there's the potential to either move forward or to soften, to receive what's new, or to brace against or push against or to go with the flow. But it's from a place of like being over yourself that there's an activation, I think, to fall into what's next. There's so much more philosophy and wisdom that Sarah and I and others will share with you over time about the nature of movement and the way that we seek change in our lives and how we look for what's meaningful and put our energy around it. But I think that's enough to get started with this idea. And so as you move forward, the synopsis of the things that we talked about was metaphors for change. So the body as a way that we first experience change. It's the moving of our flesh, the moving of our tissue. And then it's from, I think, those first felt experiences in our body that we then make sense out of or interpret or frame the way we engage with change in our larger lives. And a couple ways we talked about that was we might be moving through the tasks of our day in our lives, and it's not necessarily about the sequence, one to the next to the next, or what it is that we're doing that creates how the day feels, but how we are organizing the rhythm of the day. So where do we pause and rest? Do we pause and rest and then go for a very reversal? Do we pause and rest and then start anew and then gradually move through something? Pause and rest and then find a new gradual sweeping way of moving through something? Or is it more of an extreme? We go from one and then reverse to the other or something else and then we rest. And then we do something, and then we go kind of almost towards the opposite, and then we rest. And they're both really energizing. I think we need access to and to feel comfortable doing both. And some can feel better than others. And some of them are sort of very unique to us, those rhythms. And also talked a little bit about the idea of being one-dimensional or multidimensional and the different poles we have for our energy. And finally, the heart as a part of our body that can shine forward into the future or shine back into the past, and how it is that we do that then gives different feelings about what could happen or going to happen, and also what did happen and how we make sense out of that, which changes how we move forward. And then, and finally, this idea of getting over it, which is implying fully shifting your weight to a new base of support, which is like getting fully here, which has then this presence to be adaptable to what's next. All right, that's it. More coming. Bye.